Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy life and schedule to join me today on the Monday morning broadcast. Today is Monday, August 16th, 2021. We are rapidly running out of summer, and oh, I love this season, and I hate to see it go away. I'm not a big fan of the fall, but here we are, midway through the month of August. Today on The Cross in the Desert, I want to focus in on two areas in the Middle East where nightmares are taking place. And I'm referring to the COVID crisis in Iran through the mismanagement and the government, and the nightmare in Afghanistan with President Biden's complete breakdown of the system and allowing the Taliban to recapture. And it dishonors our troops and militaries, but here we are, just a few weeks away from withdrawing our troops, and it's like Saigon in Vietnam. And I'll be getting to all these stories in just a moment. I want to begin today by telling you that my Iranian friends are just completely in fear of their families back in Iran. I'm talking about my Iranian friends that are refugees in other countries that are safe, they have freedom, but their heart is broken about what's happening back in Iran. And it began last February when the government ignored this crisis they knew was spreading all over the world, and still they encouraged people to go out and vote, to take participate in the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, and there the spread began. Just a couple of days ago, I came across an article in the Wall Street Journal entitled "Iran Hit by Worst COVID-19 Wave Yet as Vaccine Rollout Flounders." I want to read this to you. I want you to listen from the heart about what's happening in this very troubled culture of death. "A record surge in infections and deaths from COVID-19 in Iran poses an early challenge to new President Ibrahim Raisi, as authorities struggle to contain an outbreak of the highly infectious Delta variant amid loose pandemic restrictions and a slow vaccine campaign. Hospitals across the country are just overwhelmed. Many face shortages of beds and exhausted personnel, prompting the armed forces to say they would help turn mosques and stadiums into facilities for convalescing patients. Iran was the first coronavirus hotspot in the Middle East and remains the hardest hit country in the region, and it's largely due to a botched response from authorities, experts and analysts say. The government has been reluctant to impose fresh lockdown, the latest wave, as the country's economy is reeling from damaging U.S. sanctions. Authorities have also been lax in enforcing mask and social distancing requirements. Mr. Rossi, who is the new president, who draws his support from the conservative base, has refused to ban religious gatherings despite recommendations from health authorities. This week, Iranian television broadcast images of thousands of mourners gathered in cities around the country to mark the annual Muharram Festival. No cancellation there. About only 4.4%, just 4.4% of Iran's roughly 80 million people have been fully inoculated, mostly, and it's with a Chinese vaccine, according to Iranian authorities. About 18% have received just one dose, according to Iran's health ministry. The low vaccination rate is mainly due to a shortage of doses following a de facto ban on vaccines produced in the U.S. and U.K., and that was imposed by the Supreme Leader, who in January called them completely untrustworthy. Meanwhile, production of Iran's domestic shots hasn't met the targets needed to expand Tehran's vaccination campaign. So faced with a growing crisis, knowing what's going on right before his eyes, Mr. Khamenei on Wednesday broke from his earlier stance, urging authorities to double down on their efforts to procure vaccines, including foreign ones. Vaccines, whether imported or domestically produced, must be provided with twice the effort in any way possible and made available to all people, according now to the Supreme Leader. The number of new cases in Iran reached about 40,000 a day just this past week, with more than 500 dead on Thursday. Both figures are higher than the previous record set during the last major coronavirus surge in late 2020. The official death toll, and this is where it gets tricky, we don't know the exact number of deaths, but the official death toll is nearing 100,000, though critics say the number is far higher. While the total number of cases have reached 4.3 million, and that's according to the health ministry. We are stuck in a whirlpool, says Arash Anisian, the head of Tehran's EBN Sina Hospital. Infections have risen sharply because of, quote, non-compliance with health protocols, low vaccination rates, and because of the government's display and delay in import of vaccine. He said they've spent more on producing Iranian vaccines than it would have cost to buy foreign ones, said Abbas Husseini. He's a 56-year-old shop owner in Tehran who was vaccinated once but whose family hasn't received any jabs. You can't play with people's lives like this, Abbas says. With public anger growing, especially over the vaccine shortage, they're in power. Those in power have sought to shift the blame. This is what's going on. The head of Tehran's COVID-19 task force, Alireza Zali, this week criticized authorities in the previous government, which was under President Hassan Rouhani, saying they failed to impose lockdown restrictions or procure enough vaccines. In an admission that shocked many Iranians, Mr. Zali also said Tehran had covered up the actual COVID-19 death toll in reporting to the World Health Organization and refrained from buying foreign vaccines because of their cost. Iran also failed to consult international experts and turned away foreign aid at the airport, according to Mr. Zali. In response to the criticism, former Foreign Minister Javad Zarif said Thursday on Instagram that his government has acquired 24 million doses through imports and donations. Iran has received 10 million doses in donations from China and 2.5 million from Japan. It has also received 2.2 million vaccines from the International COVAX program in two shipments produced by Korea and Italy. Some Iranians criticized their leaders for not taking responsibility for their mistakes. Quote, I just want them to resign and go home and leave the experts to do their job, said Hassan. He's a 35-year-old unemployed man in Tehran who hasn't been vaccinated and said he was afraid to go outside due to the rampant Delta variant. Critics have accused vested interests in the ruling establishment for the delay in importing more vaccines as they push for the use of those produced by home by entities that they can control. They intentionally delayed getting people vaccinated with the hope that their own internal vaccine would become available for use. That's according to Kamir Ali, an Iranian public health expert. BreakVac Foundation, the producer of Iran's co-vaccine, is a subsidiary of Sattad, a multi-billion dollar conglomerate controlled by the supreme leader. Mohammad Makhber, a confidant of Mr. Khamenei, headed Sadat until this week when he was nominated as first vice president of the country. So Iran wants to use their own vaccines. It's a lot cheaper. But because of their incompetence, because the supreme leader for many months banned the import of vaccines from the U.S. and U.K., saying they're untrustworthy, and because there was no restrictions, no lockdown, the people of Iran have been suffering horribly. And I think of my friends, I just ask for your prayers that there will be a breakthrough for the people of Iran who suffer so much in this culture of death. And now with this virus so rampant, please, please pray for my dear Iranian friends. Now, the current news situation has been flooded with the incompetence of the Biden administration to pull the troops out and let the Taliban reestablish themselves in Afghanistan. What were we there for 20 years? What was our goals? Why would we do this to the Afghan people? Where is all of the training of the Afghan military? Where has it paid off? I thought we defeated the Taliban. Apparently not. And what I want to do is focus in on one of the greatest growing fears in the midst of this chaos. It's Afghan women who fear returning to the dark days amid the Taliban. This is an article from the AP, a very powerful article. And I want to talk to you about one particular person featured in the article. Her name is Zara. It was early evening, and Zara, her mother, and three sisters were on their way to dinner at another sister's home when they saw people running and heard gunshots on the street. The Taliban are here, people screamed. In just a few minutes, everything changed for the 26-year-old resident of Herat, Afghanistan's third largest city. Zara grew up in a mostly Taliban-free Afghanistan where women dared to dream of careers and girls actually got an education. Excuse me. For the past 5 years, she has been working with local nonprofit organizations to raise awareness for women and press for gender equality. Her dreams and ambitions came crashing down this past Thursday evening as the Taliban swept into the city, planting their white flags emblazoned with an Islamic proclamation of faith in Central Square as people on motorcycles and in cars rushed to their homes. Like most other residents, Zara, her parents, and five siblings are now hunkering indoors, too scared to go out and worried about the future. The Associated Press chose not to identify her by full name to avoid making her a target. Quote, I am in big shock, said Zara, a round-faced, soft-spoken young woman. How can it be possible for me as a woman who has worked so hard and tried to learn in advance to now have to hide myself and stay at home? Amid a lightning offensive over the past several days, the Taliban now control more than two-thirds of the country. Now, I just want to mention in an update, Kabul is under siege and has probably fallen to the Taliban. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 250,000 Afghans have fled their homes since the end of May, that's back in May, amid fears the Taliban would reimpose their strict and ruthless interpretation of Islam, all but eliminating women's rights. 80% of those displaced are women and children. This group, the Taliban, ruled the country for 5 years until 2001 when we invaded. And during that time, it forbade girls an education and women the right to work and refused even to let them travel outside their homes without a male relative to accompany them. The Taliban at that time, before the U.S.-led invasion in 2001, carried out public executions, chopped off the hands of thieves, and stoned women accused of adultery. There have been no confirmed reports of such extreme measures yet, but militants were reported to have taken over some homes and set fire to at least one school. At a park in Kabul, transformed since last week into a shelter for the displaced, families told the AP, the Associated Press, on Friday that girls riding home in a motorized rickshaw in the northern Takhar province were stopped and lashed for wearing revealing sandals. A school teacher from the province said no one was allowed to go out to the market without a male escort. Some 3,000 families, mainly from the northern provinces recently taken over by the Taliban, now live in tents inside the park, some of them on the sidewalk. Back to Zara. She stopped going to the office about a month ago as the militants approached Herat, and she worked remotely from home. But on Thursday, Taliban fighters broke through the city's defensive lines, and she has been unable to work since then. Her eyes well up with tears as she's considered the possibility that she will not be able to return to work, that her 12-year-old sister will be unable to continue going to school. She loves to learn, Zara says, that her older brother will not be able to play football, or that she won't be able to freely play the guitar again. The instrument hung on a wall behind her as she spoke. She listed some of the achievements made by women in the past 20 years since the Taliban's ouster. Incremental but meaningful gains in what is still a deeply conservative, male-dominated society. Since then, girls are now in school and women are in parliament, in government, in business. But that's all going to change. You can't uneducate millions of people, Marion O'Grady from Care International says. If women are back behind walls and not able to go out as much, at least now they can educate their cousins and neighbors and their own children in ways that couldn't happen 25 years ago. I feel we're like a bird who makes a nest for a living and spends all the time building it, but then suddenly and helplessly watching over others destroy it. And that was according to Zermina Kakar. She's a 26-year-old women's rights activist in Kabul. Kakar was a year old when the Taliban entered Kabul the first time in 1996, and she recalled a time when her mother took her out to buy her ice cream back when the Taliban ruled. Her mother was whipped by a Taliban fighter for revealing her face for just a couple of minutes. Today again, I feel that if the Taliban come to power, we will return back to the same dark days, she said. This is a sadness beyond belief. It is so frustrating because I think of women's rights all the time. I speak out for those in Iran and Saudi Arabia and, of course, Afghanistan. And when I think of the evil that's happening in the world, I can only turn my attention to the God of the Bible, who promises to hear the voice of the oppressed, who is the only one that can save and salvage Afghanistan from the destructive and demonic Taliban. And there is a particular psalm I want to share with you right now. It is a cry of the oppressed. It is a psalm, an imprecatory psalm, calling upon God to bring an end to the evil in Afghanistan. Psalm 10 says this, Lord, why do you seem so far away when evil is near? Why have you hidden yourself when I need you the most. The arrogant and their elitist pride persecute the poor and helpless. May you pour out upon them the very evil they've dreamed up against others. How they brag and boast of their cravings, exalting the greedy. They congratulate themselves as they despise you. These arrogant ones, so smug and secure in their delusion, the wicked boast, saying, God doesn't care about what we do. There's nothing to worry about. So successful are they in their schemes and prosperous in all of their plans. Your laws are far from them. They scoff at their enemies. They boast that neither God nor men will bring them down. They sneer at all their enemies, saying in their hearts, we'll have success in all we do and never have to face trouble. Their mouths spew out cursing, lies, and threats. Only trouble and turmoil come from all their plans. Like beasts lurking in the shadows of the city, they crouch silently in ambush, waiting for the innocent to pass by. Pouncing on the poor, they catch them in their snare to murder their prey in secret as they plunder their helpless victims. They crush the lowly as they fall beneath their brutal brawls, watching their victims collapse in defeat. They say to themselves, the lofty one is not watching while we do this. He doesn't even care. We can get away with this. Now arise, Yahweh God. Crush them once and for all. Don't forget the helpless and oppressed. How dare the wicked think they'll reject God and escape judgment? They say to themselves, God won't hold me accountable. Lord, I know you see all that they're doing, noting their each and every deed. You know the trouble and turmoil they've caused. Now punish them thoroughly for all that they've done. The poor and helpless ones trust in you, for you are famous for being the helper of the fatherless. I know you won't let them down. Break the power of the wicked and all their strong arm tactics. Search them and destroy them for all the evil things they've done. You, Yahweh, our King forever and ever. All the nations will perish from your land. Yahweh, you have heard the desires of the humble and seen their hopes. You will hear their cries and encourage their hearts. The orphans and the oppressed will be terrified no longer, for you will bring them justice, and no earth dweller will trouble them again. Such is my cry of the heart from Psalm 10 to the people of Afghanistan and Iran this morning. And now this is Tim Hughes performing a beautiful song of worship, The God of Justice, right now on the cross in the desert.
We broken must go. From just singing, move us into action. We must go.
Powerful worship music from Tim Hose and the God of Justice. Our God is a God of justice. This week, I encourage you to take the Passion Translation of Psalm 10, as you heard me pray this morning, and spend time praying for the situation in Iran and Afghanistan and wherever the Lord leads you to pray. But the Afghan people need your powerful praying, and Psalm 10 is amazingly powerful. It's a psalm of retribution on the evil. It's an imprecatory psalm. I want to thank you for joining me this morning. I don't have to say, just keep praying for the people of Iran. Keep speaking out. Do your best to stay safe in the midst of this crisis. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert. Have a great week.